Welcome to the Divorce Coaches Academy podcast with co-founders and hosts, Tracy Callahan and Deborah Doak. Each week, we tackle another tough topic to help professional divorce coaches maximize client impact and cultivate thriving practices. We also want to spread the word about the expertise and value that certified divorce coaches bring to the table. At DCA, we are committed to ongoing learning and we value generosity among divorce coaching professionals. We believe that when one succeeds, we all succeed. Welcome back to Divorce Coaches Academy. I'm here with Deborah, and today we are talking about something that I find absolutely fascinating, the concept that everyone seems to be divorcing a narcissist, right? And what is the role of the divorce coach in that process? You know, Deb, it doesn't take much. All you need to do is kind of flip through Twitter, Insta, Facebook, and you will see one post after another that everybody seems to be divorcing a narcissist, right? But the reality is in actuality, NPD, right, is a diagnosis that is extremely rare. About 0.5 to 5% of the US population is diagnosed, clinically diagnosed with NPD, right? And I get it, right? There are lots of symptomatology that we see that people have sort of traits of personalities. And I want to go through some of them because I'm sure as divorce coaches, they hear this all the time, right? Some personality disorder traits related to NPD include inflated sense of self-importance and entitlement, right? They need constant admiration. They expect special treatment. They exaggerate achievement and talents. Oh, for sure, they have negative reaction to criticism, right? That's all that blame and somebody else is at fault. They're preoccupied by power and success, have unrealistic narratives. They want people to be envious of them. They have an inability to recognize the needs of others. They lack empathy. And they behave in an arrogant manner with an inflated sense of ego and superiority and entitlement, right? Sound familiar, everyone? Does that sound familiar, Deb? I mean, I have a lot of clients who come in and describe exactly that, right? But one of the things that I think is extremely important for divorce coaches is that we help our clients not get lost in the title, right? Those words, because does it really change anything? Does it change how our clients show up for this process?
Right. Getting stuck on the label. So let's back up a little bit and talk about some of those symptoms or the diagnostic criteria that you went through for NPD, narcissistic personality disorder. The one thing we know for sure is that divorce causes good people to behave badly.
Right? For sure.
Yep. For sure.
Situational.
When I am afraid, when I am angry, when I am feeling all the feels that divorce can bring up, I might act selfish, mm-hmm. entitled, mm-hmm. some lack empathy, right? I am self-interested at this point, which can look a lot like some of that diagnostic criteria you talked about.
Yes.
So, right. So a couple things. One, who can diagnose narcissism? Not you.
Not you. Me. Not me. Not our clients, right?
Not our clients. A medical professional, a psychologist, a psychiatrist. It's a series of tests. And so then the question becomes, does it matter? Even if they are diagnosed, let's say they do agree to go for a psych eval, and it comes out that they are diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder, then what? Does it matter?
Yeah.
And the answer really is no. It doesn't really change what's going to go on in your divorce, including your parenting plan.
Absolutely.
It's not a thing. Mm-hmm. So getting focused on the label has us putting the spotlight on the wrong things.
Absolutely. It distracts us. It provides some sense of justification, but actually mm-hmm. for our clients, it's very disempowering,
right?
It's to say, well, they're a narcissist, therefore,
Right.
I need to hire the best attorney possible. I am only going to be able to get what I'm entitled to through the court process in a litigated battle. Mm-hmm. And we know, right, that that actually might be counterintuitive in terms of where you want to go, that outcome. Because we know that courts can't legislate people to be kind, gracious. And we do know, right, based on the work that Bill Eddy has done, that a courtroom for somebody who demonstrates narcissistic-like traits or has NPD, it's a playground for them, right? They show up extremely charming, well-presented, extremely articulate. And then, yeah, our clients might be sitting there kind of emotionally triggered, somewhat of a hot mess. And again, you know, what does that look like for them? Are they gaining what they want, mm-hmm. right? Are they moving through this process in the most efficient way possible? Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say there's other alternatives, right? And right. that's supported by other people.
It is supported by other people. So let's talk about why dropping that label is important for our client, okay? First of all, you know, this idea of being diagnosed, not having an impact in the outcome. When people get hung up on the label, I think it can set them up with unrealistic expectations, right? Well, if I can prove he's a narcissist, then I'll get sole custody. Then I'll get more of this. Then this outcome will happen. So unrealistic expectations, we know, is one of the things that drives conflict in divorce.
Absolutely.
Okay. So number one, that label can create some unrealistic expectations with your client. That's yep. going to set them up for a more difficult situation. Right?
Right. And that fear, right? As we talked about a lot, and fear is paralyzing, right? So that fear is sort of keeping them stuck, right? Mm-hmm. Being able to associate with that label is very disempowering. Basically says, okay, well, I have no ability to change my situation. Therefore, I need other people to see, right, mm-hmm. that they're at fault. And it actually, you know, shifts that paradigm where that person continues to stay in that same situation.
Right. It creates an impression that something is happening to me. Your client has a story now that something is happening to them and they feel helpless and hopeless and powerless because this thing is happening to them.
Yeah.
When in fact, yes, they can't control what their spouse or ex is doing, but they have a ton of power. And that's where we want to focus on strategy. Yeah. Drop the label, focus on strategy. Keep the spotlight where it needs to be, which is not on what he or she is doing or not doing. It's what can you help your client do?
Yeah. What right? can they do?
What can they do?
Right.
Because, right. And before we get into that, and there are two things they can do, protect and respond. Let's be clear. The other thing is it's up to them. They can't pass their power over to their court or their attorney because their attorney and the judge, they don't have a little bag of fairy dust that they can sprinkle over this person and make them act right.
Right.
A court order doesn't make a high conflict person act right. They still may not follow it. That's just the truth. So we talk a lot about reality testing in divorce coaching mm-hmm. and staying grounded in reality. And so the reality is, yes, you may go to court and get a court order. That doesn't mean it's going to happen.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right? That further frustration of that disempowerment of turning your control over to somebody else, mm-hmm. right? We, again, are losing that focus. And I think for divorce coaches, it's extremely important, right? This pain that our clients are experiencing, this frustration, this anger, this sadness, this, you know, being in a situation where this person, their soon to be ex, is completely overpowering them. We need to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm.
But helping our clients move past that, recognizing that perhaps both parties. Our clients and their spouses are responding to some sense of fear, right? Mm-hmm. We talked about divorce is situational. Now, if somebody had a narcissistic-like personality traits, right, typically that's throughout their lifetime. Usually most people with personality disorders are diagnosed or start demonstrating that when they are younger, in their late teens, right, in their early adult age. So And we also know this is another really important factor, even if an individual is diagnosed with NPD, that the therapy, even if they're willing to, because most of the people don't get diagnosed because they don't believe they have a problem, but the treatment for NPD is an extremely long, slow process. Right?
It is. So it is. And we can be unhealthy and have unhealthy emotional responses and not have NPD. So, mm-hmm. you know, just because somebody was selfish, entitled, emotionally abusive during your marriage does not make them a narcissist. Right. So, you know, let's talk through what can you do for your client if they are divorcing or trying to co-parent with one of these. Let's drop the personality disorder label and simply call them a high conflict person.
Yes.
That's what Bill Eddy calls them, because that's really what we're dealing with. We're dealing with someone who likes conflict. And so that's where we need to keep the focus. How do I protect myself from this high conflict person?
Yes.
Legally and emotionally.
Absolutely, because the two play a huge role, right? If our clients are unmanaged in their emotional presentation, right, that tsunami of emotion, mm-hmm. they're unable to participate in a decision-making process, which we know is essential to getting to agreement, right? We talk about it all the time. Divorce is actually a negotiated agreement. You were figuring out just legally when you got married, now legally how you are disentangling this relationship, both from your parenting plan, if you have minor children, to your settlement agreement. So mm-hmm. part of that process is really working with our clients to empower them to recognize their role in that conflict. Because even if you are divorcing a high conflict individual, you still have the ability to change that for yourself. We mm-hmm. know that we cannot control or change anybody else's behavior. Your spouse is going to show up as they have been. Right? They're not going to miraculously, if they were kind of a jerk in your marriage and demonstrated some of these personality traits, they're probably more than likely going to be amplified in your divorce process. Mm-hmm. But you have the ability, our clients have the ability to develop effective skills and strategies, right? In effective communication, conflict resolution, how they engage.
They can choose if they're going to show up with a tank of gas and a set of matches, or if they're going to show up with a fire extinguisher. That's what I tell my clients.
Great analogy.
You have a choice. Are you going to pour gasoline on and light it up, or are you going to cool it down? Which are you going to bring to the party? You have a choice. So let's talk about protect. One of the most important things that divorce coaches can do is help our clients go through the what if game. Mm-hmm. And Tracy and I are both 1000% huge proponents of very detailed parenting plans and settlement agreements. Why? Because it heads off future conflict.
Yes.
You are engaging in this negotiation process with a high conflict person. Let's settle as much as we possibly can while we're here now, so we don't have to come back and do it later. So let's think through all the possible loopholes, all the what ifs. Let's detail out who, what, when, where, how.
Yep.
Who's going to do it? When are they going to do it? How is it going to get done? Who's going to pay who? When? How are you going to pay me? Is it a check? Is it Venmo? Is it Zelle? How is this going to happen?
Yes. And there's an kind of an art to this in the negotiation process, right? Something that we work with divorce coaches in both the conflict coach training as well as the pre-mediation divorce coach training, right? there's a actual strategy in terms of how you effectively communicate and negotiate. And we often talk about interest-based negotiations rather mm-hmm. than position-based negotiations. So even developing those skills to be able to have those conversations to right. get to that detailed plan are all about conflict de-escalation, both mm-hmm. currently in negotiating that settlement and also preventing future conflict by right. minimizing that ambiguity we often see in plans and custody right. agreements and in parenting plans.
Right.
You know, and a pet peeve of mine, and no offense to attorneys, but when agreements are written by attorneys, often there's all this legalese or they sort of take broad strokes. And we know those broad strokes create conflict, right? And often in negotiation settlements, they're like, okay, well, we just got, you know, we got the physical custody, we got the legal custody, time-sharing decision-making. We're going to sort of just move past this, right? We're lucky we got that. But that's actually just the beginning.
Just the beginning. Or how often have you read an agreement where it says parents will share uninsured medical expenses 50-50?
Yes.
What expenses? When do I have to provide a receipt? How long do I have to actually ask you for reimbursement?
Yeah.
How long do you have to reimburse me?
Right.
How are you going to reimburse me? Like,
yeah.
Where are the details?
Was agreed upon? Right.
Right. Where are the details about this? That sentence, the parents will share unreimbursed medical expenses 50-50, to me is a red flag. For 50,000 more harassing texts and arguments in the future. Nail that down. So I think the one thing divorce coaches can do is help our clients as they're going through the negotiation process, pay attention to, use those powerful questions. Where you guys have run into problems in the past, right? Look at this as if you are a high conflict person and you're looking for loopholes. What all do you need to have tightened up in your marital settlement agreement, your property division, your parenting plan? How can you help your client head off future conflicts? Yeah. And then the second, of course, is how do you respond with that really effective strategic communication and help them set boundaries? They're coming in resentful, angry, complaining. Those are all indicators that boundaries are missing.
Yeah.
Help them do that.
Yeah. And you know, I'm going to go out on a limb. This might sound a little crazy. Okay. So this might be.
I've known you to be crazy in many ways. So go for it.
This might be a bit provocative for some, but I actually think that sometimes when individuals are presenting like this and it's clear cut, right? We know that they lack empathy. They're blaming their grandiosity of views. I'm going to say that's a gift. Okay. And the reason I say that's a gift is because now you have information that is extremely important to be able to strategically respond to them, right? If they need the attention, let's give them some.
Right.
Okay. Let's give them some. If saying that, you know, you are very successful at your career and you work really hard, and I know you've worked hard to support our family. Right? That might feel icky in saying it, but providing that attention to that individual when we know that that's what they seek,
right?
You're going to be more successful in getting it is your proposal, your proposed term accepted rather than approaching it from this very aggressive, hostile, also engaging in some of that blaming. And and the other thing is also when our clients are, you know, labeling and putting names and narcissistic, it often is demonizing, right?
Villainizing.
They are. And again, maybe you do feel that way, but putting that out on social media or sharing that information with friends and family, what do we think is going to happen?
Right.
More than likely, that individual is going to push back and push back hard.
Yeah. So, you know, the one thing I always tell my clients when we are working on proposal development, negotiation strategy, and they're complaining and they want to come in aggressive with the blaming statements and tell them everything they've done, I say, you really have two options here. You can prove he or she is a jerk, or you can get closer to what you want. You can't have both.
Absolutely.
So like Tracy suggested, I often am going to suggest language to you. I tell my clients that's going to make you want to throw up in your mouth. Awesome. Bring some Tic Tacs, bring some chewing gum, bring some Tums, pack your purse, pack your pockets. It's going to get you closer to what you want. So you have to ask your client, assess your values, which is more important to you? Is it more important to you to get revenge, to make your case, to show what a bad person they are? Or do you want the spousal support that you want or more of your retirement account? You have to ask your client to assess their own values and prioritize that. And if it's more important to get closer to what they want in that proposal, then bring some darn chewing gum and say the thing.
Yes, it is absolutely correct, Deb. And as divorce coaches, you know, we work in helping bring that awareness to our clients.
Yes.
Right? We do not, as coaches, tell our clients what to do. We help ask powerful questions and use what I call our tools, our tool belt, to help bring that level of awareness, perspective, mindset to the surface, right? So it is so true. Do you want everybody to walk around and go, yes, you were right, that was a horrible marriage, they were such a narcissist? Or do you want to get through this process and move into, if you're co-parenting, a manageable co-parenting strategy? Because if you don't accomplish that in your settlement agreements and negotiations, you are not going to be successful in co-parenting with this individual, whether that's parallel parenting, right? Because if you do have shared legal and physical custody, some aspect of that, there is going to be communication. Right? There's going to need to be communication. Right. You're going to have to work in some manner, whether it is co-parenting or parallel parenting.
Right, right. So I guess if I can wrap up today, it is, yes, we agree. You're divorcing a jerk. Okay, let me validate that. We can do that for our clients. That sounds awful, right? That sounds terrible.
Acknowledgement, yes.
Right, that sounds awful. What if we drop the label? What if we call them a jerk? What if we call them come up with your own name, change your name in your phone? I don't care, right? But what if we, instead of focusing on them and what they're doing to you, we focus on the strategy of what you can do to protect yourself?
Amen.
You're legally and emotionally. And then I'm going to back it up and repeat what you said. And let's accept that it's a gift that they're showing you who they are. Because that is all kinds of juicy data that you can use against them to get what you need.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, you know, as always, I think we could go on and on about this. And I'm sure we'll have another episode where we'll dig into it a little more, maybe about specific strategies. But today we just wanted to introduce, I guess, this idea of how you can take a client coming in with this complaint of I'm diagnosing a narcissist and maybe shift perspective a little bit to help them take their power back, and how you as a coach can help them make that a little bit more productive. So thanks for hanging in with us this week, and we'll see you again next week.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for the Divorce Coaches Academy podcast. If you enjoyed today's show, please give us a rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting app. It helps other divorce professionals find us and add to the conversation. And don't forget to follow us on social media to be the first to know when we add new classes and events. We'll be back next week with another topic to help you maximize client impact, create a thriving business, and promote the value of professional divorce coaching.